I really wasn't sure how to do it. Like, how do you actually leave this culture that's been a part of your life your whole life? I just couldn't envision the practicalities of that.
For me, it was a real grieving process.
I almost view this like an act of a good Samaritan, helping people down a path that can be really painful and helping them figure out how to make it through.
I found this community, and I found a space that's normalized my experience.
There are a lot of people who have been down this path before you. There will be a lot of people coming after you, and it's okay.
There is a light at the other end.
We are not intending to talk anyone out of the church. This is for people who've already decided they've left. This is for the wardless.
You're listening to Wardless, a post-Mormon field guide, a podcast addressing the challenges and practicalities of navigating life after Mormonism, because leaving the church can be a little bit peculiar. Join us as we explore the path away from Mormonism and examine what it means to be wardless.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wardless Podcast. My name is Oliver, and I moderated the discussion that we're continuing in today's episode. If you haven't listened to our previous episode, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the first half of our conversation with Dave, Miles, and Doug as they talk about what it was like for them as a priesthood holder and how their thoughts and feelings about priesthood changed through their wordless experience. Because it was a long discussion and there was a lot of content we wanted to share with you, we split it into two pieces. This episode picks up halfway through, and I'm going to ask them about their experiences once they started being public about their change in belief as a priesthood holder. Thanks for joining us. I wanted to start to talk about after the time you no longer believe and you start to be a little public with people and the expectations to use your priesthood start to come up. And in particular, I'm interested what was easy for you and conversely, what was hard for you? Dave, do you want to kick us off?
Well, so we stepped away from the church sort of following the wordless methodology in one of those first episodes of the Wordless Podcast.
Oh, are you talking about our episode, How to Stop Attending Church?
Yes.
That was episode number 3.
I think so.
Okay.
In conjunction with that, we sent an email out to all of our family, and we set a pretty clear boundary about what we were willing to do and not do, and did the same thing with our ward leaders. And so really, I have not been asked since then to give a priesthood blessing by anybody in the church, any family members, because they all kind of knew right where we were. So there has been one instance where my had a family member that was in the hospital, and I was there visiting, and a member of their ward came to give a blessing. But it wasn't really awkward for me at all, because everyone except for that ward member in the room knew that I was no longer a priesthood guy.
Yeah.
And so they gave a blessing. I pulled the curtain back and let the nurses know, hey, I'm going to say a prayer in here. And so that was it. That's really kind of the only thing since I've stepped away, because I think in part because we were so clear on what our boundary was.
When you set that boundary, was it specifically a boundary about priesthood?
Not really.
Okay.
It was just all things church related.
Got it.
And so we really I have not been really put in that situation, that uncomfortable situation being asked to give a blessing that I wouldn't give.
It was also interesting when you tell that story at the hospital, you gave yourself a job to do. So
yeah.
It's not that you were just standing there while all the other men went and put their hands on the sick person's head. You close the curtain, you talk to the nurses. I think that's a really smart strategy.
Well, and respecting their belief too.
Yeah.
That it's okay for me that they believe that the blessing's important.
Yeah.
I once believed that, and I can respect that and honor that.
It's cool to see that respect going both ways.
Yeah.
That they're respecting your choice not to be a part, and you're respecting their choice to do this.
Yeah.
Was there anything that has surprised you?
I think the surprising thing was that I've really not had any interest in it.
Yeah.
I've really not had any interest in seeking out opportunities to give blessings or being a part of that. It's just not part of my worldview now. It's
so
not part
something of my, you let go of.
Yeah.
That's so interesting because it had been so important to you.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, it was a slow and gradual process. I don't think that overnight I decided priesthood was not important.
Yeah.
But today where I sit, it's not at all. But at the same time, you know, if there was somebody who needed comfort or support or help because they were ill or sick, like I would want to provide that. It just wouldn't come in the form of laying my hands on their head and giving them a blessing. You know, it might come in the form of sitting with them, holding their hand, comforting them in some other way.
I love that idea that you can do what the thing did in a different way, in a way that's authentic to you. Thanks for sharing that, Dave. It's not something that everyone is able to do. Not everyone is able to say, my whole family is walking away from today. And I know you, Miles and Doug, didn't have that experience. You know, Doug, as you've already hinted at, the slow fade, and Miles, the asynchronous, you know, stepping away with your spouse. So Miles, for you, what was easier or harder than you expected about being asked to use your priesthood after you hit that point of like, whoop?
Yeah, well, it's hard to think of anything that was actually easy, but I do have two examples that I think I'd like to share. Mm-hmm. So the first one was after about a year of leaving, my entire family, my wife and children were still attending church, and there was this expressed desire to not communicate about it from both my children and my wife. And it felt very isolating to me, and I felt very judged. I felt looked down on. Mm-hmm. I felt excluded. A lot of really sad feelings. And there was this moment where I had been up late the night before, and I went to sleep. And as I said before, I had this really bad physical condition. It made me extremely difficult to move. Mm-hmm. And I remember waking up like on a Saturday morning, and my wife came in and said, the home teacher is here to give a blessing, but he thinks you should do it. Do you want to do it? And I was just so tired, and I was in incredible pain, and I was naked because I no longer wear my garments.
Yeah.
So I was in my bed, and I was just like, what? I felt completely ambushed because everyone knew I didn't believe. Mm-hmm. They were trying to convince me that I should do this, and I thought, maybe I'll try. And then I thought, wait a minute, what? No, I can't do this. This is just none. It's unfair to me to ask me to do all this right now. But then I said, well, what is the problem? And she said, well, your daughter is sick and she called your home teacher because she wants a blessing. And
wow,
when I heard that, I was like, so my daughter is sick. She needs love and attention and caring, and yet she's calling my neighbor down the road instead of her own father to come care for her.
What did that feel like?
I felt so like replaced and just like unimportant and kind of rejected, you know. It felt really bad, especially. And the other thing was, I was really good friends with this guy.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing it out of pure love, right? Because that's one thing I wanted to mention is, you know, home teaching is one of the beautiful things about priesthood, you know, caring mm-hmm. about your neighbor and service and loving and making connections, right? But in this case, it kind of like felt like it was backfiring on me because he was coming to give service, but the reality was he was replacing my role in caring for my children. And I felt very conflicted. Because he understood where I was coming from.
Yeah.
And
oh, so you had been open with him about where you were.
Yeah, he knew. Yeah. But he still thought maybe I would want to do it because he sees things differently. And I love the guy. He's awesome. But I wrote him an email.
So did he end up giving
He ended up giving the blessing. I want to hear about this.
So he ended up giving the blessing. And did you participate?
No. No, I just couldn't do it.
Did you even go in the room or were you separate from it?
No, I was so tired and so
you stayed in bed.
I was so disabled. Like I just couldn't. I literally couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't actually all want. It was, I couldn't.
So afterwards, it sounds like you felt the need to say something to him. So someone you're close with, someone that you've been open about your faith struggles with.
Yeah, I wrote him an email, and I think it would be good to read because it shows my feelings right in the moment.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. I won't read the whole thing, but it says, I tried to get up for the blessing, but I didn't feel up to it. I feel emotional about this because it shows the problem of the narrative of the church putting a wedge between the child and the father. When my sick child should seek comfort from her father, she seeks it from you instead. Why? Because she believes you have authority to perform a priesthood blessing. And that is the authority my daughter trusted in. I imagine you probably felt conflicted because deep in your heart, you sense it is not right for my daughter to ask you for comfort instead of me. The problem is that my child views me as less than. To her, I am unworthy, and that really breaks my heart. This is where the narrative of the church tears my family apart. And I said, I think the harm from this belief outweighs the good. So there was a couple of things I said, but I was really devastated.
Absolutely. And what were you hoping to accomplish sending this email to your friend?
I'd had talks with him about church before, and I just kind of wanted him to see that even though he's trying to do good, it might not be good. You know, it could be hurtful.
You're trying to have help him gain that perspective.
I think so. A little bit was me trying to be controlling as well, like trying to control the people.
Yeah.
Which I think, by the way, is a result of priesthood authority when you're taught that you're responsible for preaching and teaching and you're responsible for the way that other people act because it's your job to be the example and the one who corrects them. I was just living that.
That's a message you'd really internalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something I've been working on is to try not to control other people.
I appreciate like how open you've been about this experience. And I'm really curious, looking back on that today, what are you glad you did about the way you handled that? And what do you wish you could have handled differently?
Well, I actually think that I did a good job in reaching out to him because if you have harsh feelings with someone and you're friends with them, you need to work it out, right? So I think that was appropriate. And we have, you know, we're still great friends because we talked about it. And so that was great. But I wanted to give one other example of something I did that was a positive thing. We had a tradition of giving a blessing before my kids would start their next year of school on the night before school.
My father always did that for us growing up. Doug and Dave, same was here. That something?
Same.
Okay, got it. Okay, so the father's blessing before the start of school, yeah.
So I really wanted to do that for my children, but I didn't believe that I could do a priesthood blessing because I didn't believe in it. So I had this split-second idea. We were all sitting around. I said, all right, we're going to do this. And I put a chair in the middle of the room, and I had each child come up. And I said, what we're going to do, we're going to have everyone, they'll take turns sitting in the chair, and then we can each have a turn to walk up, put our hand on their shoulder, and talk about them. And so I started, and I brought up a kid, and I said, okay, you come up here, and I talked about it. And it's basically a blessing without the Heavenly Father and the Amen, right?
Yeah.
Like, I want this for you, and I hope this, and all this stuff. Then I turned to my wife and said, okay, your turn. And she felt a little bit ambushed, which she told me afterwards. But she did do it. And so the cool thing was I basically did it, my wife did it, and each kid went up and did it. And it turned to be this really amazing experience because my wife got to do it. And not only that, an important part of it was touching them.
Mm-hmm. What made that so special?
I just remember someone putting hands on my head and feeling like, oh, I'm being touched by this person. It just, you feel, we all live in bodies, right? Mm-hmm. And we experience everything through it. So I think one of the most important parts of priesthood blessings is touching, putting hands on heads.
The physical connection.
Yeah. You feel that warmth and that sensation.
That tactile sensation.
Of connectedness, right? It's beautiful. And it was a great experience. And I think we're going to keep on doing that.
What a beautiful tradition.
I mean, it's a way to take something that's already important and to like adapt it.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that oftentimes as active Mormons, we have this thing that dads can only be a dad when they're being a priesthood holder. And so we do this formalized blessing at the beginning of the school year because that is how the father is supposed to be a father, as opposed to just being a father and expressing that level of love and that touch that the child needs, that that time and that energy and that. And as I look to the future for me, I don't want to be a parent who can only function by formality.
This is an entire aspect that as you walk away from Mormonism, as a father, due to that tight coupling of priesthood and the role of father, how you have to decouple it. It's such a fascinating idea. Please, Doug.
I can totally relate to that, though. I think the formality of presiding and of, you know, being the presiding leader in the house and of, you know, priesthood, exercising, you know, my priesthood role, it always felt like somebody else, right? Like I was supposed to be acting a certain way because that's the way that somebody else was going to do. That's not me, right? I'm immature. I
make, own it.
I make fart jokes with my kids, and you know, I'm just not. That isn't the type of personality that I have, and it always to me felt like I was wearing a, you know, trying to be some version of what I was told that a father should act like. It never felt natural. It always felt awkward. And I think I would rather be myself with my kids than what my culture says I'm supposed to be with them.
Every episode, listeners, we have someone who produces the episode. They sit here, take notes, and they don't have a microphone in front of them. And tonight, Donna is producing our episode. And I actually want to pull Donna on a microphone for a second, if we can. And I'm curious, from a woman's perspective, do you feel something similar to what Doug alluded to, that there is an expectation on how you will be a mother inside of Mormonism that you've had to step away, even without the priesthood there?
Okay, that's super interesting to think about. At the pivotal moment of my faith crisis, I was in the bathroom at 2 a.m. crying because I didn't know how to be a Mormon anymore, but I didn't know how to not be Mormon. And absolutely, a lot of that was wrapped up in being a mother. But I don't think that there was any of, for me at least, the strength of connection between my testimony and like my role as a mother. They were intertwined, but it wasn't like I had this power that defined my motherhood, like a literal power that I'd been told that I held that defined my motherhood. And so it's really fascinating for me to sit here and listen to you guys. And I was just running down a question, like, after you left the church, did you have a crisis of like, how can I be a dad now? You know, and connecting it back to that question that I had of how do I even not be a Mormon? Mm-hmm. Since you're talking about this connection between fatherhood and priesthood, I'm so curious if that came into play for all of you, because it wasn't, there was questions there for me, mm-hmm. and I didn't know how to parent really outside of Mormonism, mm-hmm. but it, like, as far as my identity as a mother, it just wasn't as much of a crisis or like a existential thing.
You were still going to be your kid's mother.
Yes, absolutely.
Doug, you were starting to talk about this a little bit. Would you want to take a first pass at Donna's question?
I don't necessarily think that I worried about it because it felt more natural.
That's right? The sense I got from your previous answer. It felt like liberation to you.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, like it. You know, like I said, I tried. We did the Father's blessings, and they felt awkward. Right, me calling everyone for family home evening felt awkward. I always felt super awkward when we would have guests come over, and as the presiding head of the house, I'm supposed to call on the person to give the prayer. Mm-hmm. Like all of those things just felt super awkward. Like it's just not my personality. Like I said, I'm irreverent. I'm very immature sense of humor. Mess around with my kids all the time, and I feel more like I can just kind of be myself with them, mm-hmm. and, you know, show them that I love them, as opposed to having to, you know, square peg, round hole. Right?
So it allowed you to be more authentic.
Yes.
Yeah. What about you, Miles?
So I missed some of the scheduled time with my kids. You know, like there was, the church did something about scheduling time with your kids in some ways. But on the flip side, not having a calling
meant I had so much more time to spend with my kids. Mm. And so it became more of just like hanging out with them. I was more able to just be with them without an agenda, without anything that I had to do. And you can just be their friend and talk about life in a much more relaxed, real situation rather than scheduled appointments to do everything. Also, I would say I'm able to parent in a more realistic way regarding like sexuality, masturbation issues, pornography issues. Like you can talk about this stuff so much more easy in this context, I think. It's been really good for my wife and I to talk to our kids about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. What about you, Dave? To restate the question that Donna asked, like, did your crisis of faith also impact your view of yourself as a father?
I feel like my crisis of faith sort of edged along through my parenthood.
Uh-huh.
And I think it evolved very slowly. Maybe it changed it, but not in a perceptible way.
So it could have been an influence, but it wasn't like there was a meteoric, mm-hmm. or it wasn't like there was a seismic change.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not find myself in the bathroom wondering if I could be a dad.
Yeah. it's just so interesting. It's so interesting to think of that idea of like fatherhood and priesthood was tied very tightly for so many of you, but it, and please tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, it sounds like it was a liberation from something more so than it was I am now rudderless. Yeah. I mean, you had mentioned earlier that an important aspect to priesthood was authority. Was that authority linked also to your fatherhood?
No, it really didn't. And I think the relationship that I've had with my wife and I've had with my kids, like really from very early on, was one of equality with my wife, that she had just as much authority in our relationship and our parenting relationship and our marriage as I did. Mm. And I think because of that, I don't think I linked that priesthood authority as I'm the head of the household the same way that the church taught, that I had kind of found my own way with that.
I kind of felt like priesthood was the 1950s father knows best version of fatherhood. Hmm. Not necessarily not what I felt like how I wanted to be with my kids.
Not what was authentic to you.
Right.
And I would imagine that if we were to bring in more and more perspectives, we would find people who are at different points on that, where maybe mm-hmm. The head of household was a very important role. You know, you alluded to a bit the pressure you felt from it, Doug. I would imagine there could be generational differences, cultural differences that could be super interesting. This is my Facebook post plug of the podcast. It would be really interesting to hear other people's perspectives. And please, listeners, especially the priesthood holders, if you had a different experience with that authority as a father and the loss and belief of priesthood, how that affected your identity as a father, we'd love to hear about that in the Facebook group. All right. Well, thank you, Donna, for that unconventional sort of move that we did there. So, Miles, I'm curious. You just shared the story of something that's very difficult for you, dealing with the home teacher coming and giving the blessing to your daughter. Was there anything else that was hard about interactions with priesthood once you started being more public about your change of belief?
Yeah, one of the biggest issues was the perception that my wife had about the importance of priesthood in our marriage. To her, I was the person that was supposed to bring her across the veil as the priesthood holder. That was my job. And when I was no longer a priesthood holder or a believing member, she really wondered what I thought about our marriage, how much I valued our marriage. To her, it was almost as if our marriage had been annulled when I stopped believing. She just felt like we never actually got married. And if our sealing doesn't work, then what are we? That's how she explained it to me, which is maybe a different way to think about things. But for her, it really caused a wedge in our marriage when I was no longer viewed as being a worthy priesthood holder. I don't want to put any blame on her, because she was reacting from the things she learned and absorbed in the church, you know?
How did you all handle this situation?
Not well.
Unfortunately, I think listeners will really relate to that.
It was 2 years of utter hell. I mean, it was just so difficult. It's probably too long to explain in this podcast, but it was very difficult to be viewed as an unworthy priesthood holder. And I was unworthy because I didn't believe, also because I started drinking alcohol, things like that, right?
Yeah.
And it really affected our marriage. But praise be, we got through it.
It's really interesting, that idea that you went from a priesthood holder, you used an interesting phrase to me, to an unworthy priesthood holder.
Yeah, because I'm still a member of the church. I'm still, in fact, I'm a high priest.
You've been in a bishopric. Yeah. You're a high priest. Got it. So your name's still on the records of the church. Mm-hmm. You're still a member, but you're now just, it's not that you're just inactive. You're an unworthy priesthood holder.
Yeah.
Is that something that you feel, Dave and Doug?
I think early on in, as my wife and I were trying to figure out how a mixed faith marriage would work, she expressed that was a certain insecurity that she had as well, was that if I didn't value the church, then why would I value their marriage? And I think that the church does a bit of a disservice by kind of wedging itself, or, you know, imposing itself into a marital relationship, where, you know, it's like it's an equal party, and if one person changes their views about it, then somehow the relationship itself is in jeopardy.
When you think about that idea of being labeled an unworthy priesthood holder, I'm stopping because worthy was a word that came up from two of you when talking about priesthood before. Like, worthiness is a big concept. Who talked about shame? Dave, yeah. You talked about shame, right? Like, worthiness and shame go hand in hand, right? And so now being labeled an unworthy priesthood holder, that touches on the core of so many things that you feel as a priesthood holder, especially as a teenage priesthood holder.
Yeah.
Yeah. No smiles.
Yeah. The words worthiness and shame on the backside of that is acceptance and, well, judgment and acceptance, right? So it really comes down to, you want to be accepted by the people who you love. That's what it really comes down to.
You know, you use the term wedge, Doug. Really, it's this feeling of not feeling accepted anymore by the people that you love. Mm-hmm. That's not a pretty thing.
No, it's painful. It's like the opposite of what we all want.
Wow. An unworthy priesthood holder. I never thought that phrase could hold so much loaded meaning.
I want to be clear that I actually don't think I am an unworthy priesthood holder anymore.
So you said the word anymore there. Was there a period where you did feel like an unworthy priesthood holder?
No, I think that was the perception of that I was seeing around me.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't believe that I held the priesthood, because I didn't believe the priesthood was a thing.
So I want to hold off on that perception piece, because, you know, Doug, when you and I talked before this, and I might, if we're okay, sure, transition over to fine. Doug. You know, your experience as you're now, would you say you're fully public, or you're somewhere in between public?
I'm in no man's land. I have stopped actively hiding it.
Yeah, but you're not a full out on Facebook.
No, that's not really how I roll. I'm a bit of a private person.
Yeah,
as exemplified by why I'm going on a podcast to talk about myself. But.
Yeah. So you're in the middle of this private to public transition. You're transitioning in your transition, trademark Oliver. So as you've made this transition, I'm curious what's been easy and what's been hard when it comes to when you're expected to use your priesthood as you're making the fade from private to public.
I don't know that anything's been easy.
All three of you have said that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such a there are so many pitfalls, it feels like, in the process.
What have been some of those hard things for you?
For me, one of the big challenges is I don't, you know, there, I, you hear people say frequently that they don't want people to perceive them as being lazy or, you know, easily offended or whatever. And quite honestly, I feel like I can live with that, right? If people want to be like, oh, he's lazy, fine, let them think whatever they want.
You're talking about the narratives that are popularly said why people leave the church.
Yeah. The one that really bothers me is I don't want people to look at me and to think like, gee, that guy doesn't love his kids enough to go to church and be a good priesthood holder. Like that bothers me. And I worry a lot that, you know, that narrative is kind of present in the church. And I'm fully supportive of my kids continuing to go to church and my wife continuing to go to church. I do worry that they're going to pick some of that up and be like, gee, why doesn't dad go to church? Does he not love us? And it has absolutely nothing to do with that. So that, for me, that's the harder thing about some of these more kind of public moves is really just knowing that that is how some people may see it and hoping that that's not how my kids see it.
When you think about other people in the community, in, I think what you're saying, basically questioning your love for your children.
Yeah.
Like, how does that feel?
I mean, not good. You know, it's, again, I want to be respectful. I don't want to put everyone on blast and say, here's the 27 reasons that I'm right and you're wrong. And, you know, why I am actually more loving of my kids than you are, because, you know, I don't want to do anything like that. Right. So I want to be respectful, but, you know, at the same time, I think I want to be understood, right? People want to be understood. When I deconstructed everything and tore everything away and threw every last little thing off to the side to figure out what made sense, the one very last remaining thing that I knew for certain was I loved my wife. I love my kids. And so like, that's really kind of the core of who I am now. That to me feels hurtful to have that, questioned. Now, I mean, it's probably also partially that I'm a people pleaser and, you know, whatever else. Like, I don't know why I should care what, you know, acquaintances in the community think, but there was a recent general conference talk that essentially kind of took what I thought was a manipulative approach and said that if you love your family, you'll make the sacrifices now to be with them in the eternities. And I just felt like that was a low blow. But knowing that that's out there in the culture and that people see that and they read it and they think, yeah, that makes sense, like that, you know, my biggest fear, and I think the hardest thing for me is fearing that like somehow my kids will hear that and actually, you know, wonder or think there's something to it. So, you know.
I can't help but stop and think about two words that you, Doug, and Miles said. Miles, you talked about the idea of acceptance. And Doug, you talked about the idea of understanding. And I have come to view those as the universal themes of the wordless experience. And it's truly jarring to me how much pain this elicits as you grapple with parts of the wordless experience that threaten your ability to be understood and threaten your ability to be accepted, and the pain that specifically exists as you start to tie up priesthood and all of the emotions and ideas that are wrapped up in it. It doesn't make it any better that these themes are common to everyone, but I do think it's a good reminder that the pain is real and that the pain is felt by a lot of people and that we could probably help each other through this a lot better as we share our stories and we really come to understand what this experience is about. All of that to say, Miles, Dave, and Doug, thank you so much for your willingness to come to share some of the, you know, some very painful, deep, private parts of yourselves. I really hope that it's going to help a lot of our listeners, whether it's someone who's never held the priesthood and trying to understand the priesthood experience, or it's someone who's been a priesthood holder and trying to grapple with the experience of walking away from Mormonism and figuring out how on all of these things. We put a call out in our Facebook group for priesthood holders to share some of their experiences about how they've navigated walking away from Mormonism as a priesthood holder, specifically around places where priesthood would be expected to be used. And we want to share a couple of those now.
When it came time for my youngest son to be baptized, he had just turned 8 and was very excited to be baptized. It was a difficult time for me. I had become public about not believing in the church anymore to my wife and family and friends. And I was dreading the day quite a bit because I felt like an outsider, like I couldn't participate in this special day for my son. And it weighed on me heavily as the days led up to his baptism. And as time went on, I tried to figure out the best way to deal with it. And eventually, I came up with something to help me turn a potentially very negative experience into a positive one. So the day came, and the baptism happened normally. It was difficult, but knowing what was in store later helped me to get through it. And so that day, we went to a lake, just me and him, and I told him that there were 3 very important values that I had that I wanted to pass on to him. And I explained that although it was hard for me to not participate in his baptism, this was a way for us to have a special experience together. And so I brought out some sparklers because it was near the 4th of July and some donuts, which are his absolute favorite dessert. And I started to tell him the things I wanted to teach him. The first thing I told him is how important love is. I told him that it's important to have love in your life, to be accepting of all people and not judge, and that hate is what divides people and causes lots of problems. And we lit our sparklers and drew the shape of hearts in the air, and then we ate a white powdered donut, and I told him that that represented love. And by this point, he was pretty excited about what we were doing and excited to see what comes next. The second thing that we talked about is how important it is to ask questions in your life and trying to learn from any new information you gain. We lit 2 more sparklers and traced question marks in the air. Then we had bites of our next flavor of donut. Moving on, I told him the third thing that I wanted to impart to him was how important it was for him to find his own moral compass and choose his own path. I explained to him that it was something that he needed to do for himself, that I couldn't do it, that no one could really do it for him, but it was important for him as he goes through his life to try and find his place in the universe and the right path for him. And then we traced arrows in the air with another set of sparklers, and we finally had a bite of the most delicious donut of all, our chocolate donuts. To end it on a funny note, we both decided to do a chubby bunny kind of thing where we both shoved as many donuts in our mouth as we could fit. I went first and I said, "I am your dad and will always love you and be there for you, even if I can barely talk." Then it was his turn and he decided to say, "I love you, daddy." And at that point, he couldn't stop laughing. So he just said, "Ah, ha, 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 ha," with his mouth stuffed full of donuts. This ended up being one of the best experiences I've had with my son. My greatest fear for this day was to be marginalized and not be a part of it. And with what we did together, it ended up being a very special connection that we had and something that he and I will never forget.
I found that, I guess, for me, my faith transition or whatever you want to call it took place over several years. And during that time, it seemed like every time I went up and visited with my dad, he would always ask for a blessing. And I'm not sure, you know, where that came from. Just recently, my dad asked me for a blessing and I had stopped wearing my garments. I had already talked to my bishop about no longer attending. And when my dad asked me, I just flat out refused. And then we had, you know, the dreaded conversation that went along with that. You know, in terms of where I would be now, if someone asked me for a blessing or anything like that, you know, I've had conversations with my kids. I've got five children, and I've had conversations with them about not being able to ordain them to different priesthood offices. I've got a daughter that's five, so she doesn't understand or know yet that I wouldn't be able to baptize her. Where am I right now? I think probably one of the most difficult things that I'd be thinking about on the topic would be, you know, when she does get to that point where she possibly gets baptized, you know, I'd be inclined to let my little brother do it if we were going to go ahead with that. And it's actually interesting because when my oldest turned 12 and was going to be ordained as a deacon, I really actually wanted my brother to do it because even at that point in time, I didn't want to do it myself. It wasn't that I felt that in some way I wasn't worthy, but I wanted to be able to be honest with him about my feelings about the church. And, you know, if he chose to go ahead to have it done by somebody for whom it was more meaningful and honest. Anyway, I don't necessarily struggle with not being able or quote unquote worthy to give a blessing. I feel like if there is a God out there and he wants or she wants or it wants what's best for me and for my family, that it really isn't going to be dependent on me subscribing to a certain list of rules in order for my family to qualify and receive those blessings or gifts.
Well, thank you to our listeners for sharing those stories. It's nice to hear different ways on how to handle some of these situations that come up. We are now ready for the last part of the episode. I would love for each of you to share the one thing that you hope listeners take away from your story today. Miles, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. So the one thing I hope that listeners take away from my story is that you need to take back your own authority. Find ways to make your family traditions work for you and your family to fill your own needs. So in my case, an example was taking back my own authority when the home teacher came into my home and gave a blessing to my daughter, and then I took action and talked to him, kept our relationship alive, and explained to him what that meant to me. And also, when I rebuilt the tradition of giving priesthood blessings at the start of the school year and adapted it so that all of our family could participate in a new way.
Thanks, Miles. Doug?
I think key takeaway from my experience is communication, particularly in the context when priesthood ordinances or use of priesthood is involved. I needed to hear my wife say that she didn't think less of me if I wasn't performing the priesthood ordinance. And I think she needed to hear me say that it was okay if she felt like she needed a blessing to ask someone else to do it. And, you know, making sure that we were on the same page, that we had communicated that really has helped a lot.
Thanks, Doug. Dave, why don't you close us out?
The one thing I hope listeners take away from my story is it doesn't take the priesthood to express love to others.
And that's a great message to end on, Dave. Folks, that's it for this episode. Thanks to the three of you for an amazing discussion and sharing your experiences. You know, in the Wordless Facebook group, we have the chance to hear many, many more perspectives and experiences. You can find our group by searching Wordless Podcast Group on Facebook and requesting to join the group. And if you're already in the group, please share with us your experiences. We're also on Twitter, we're on Instagram, all the social medias, and we can also get in touch with us by emailing us at wordlesspodcast@gmail.com. As always, we are so grateful for our sponsors, our generous sponsors who make this podcast possible. And this week, we would like to thank Little Factories, reminding you that vigorous physical exercise helps young men in many ways.
And young ladies. You've been listening to Wardless, a post-Mormon field guide. For more information and for the show notes for this episode, visit wardlesspodcast.com. If you have a question you'd like us to answer on the podcast, a topic you'd like us to consider, or if you think you might have a unique perspective to add to an upcoming episode, we'd love to hear from you. And if you found this episode helpful, please consider leaving us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. But the most helpful thing you can do is share this episode with someone you know. So please share the love and pass on our links. Thanks again for listening. We hope it makes you feel a little less wordless.
Thanks for sharing that. I'm holding that in.
There we go. Good job.
So sorry. I'm not a big burper.
Edit the burp.
That is now the outtake.
Loop it.
Dang it.
That's the outtake.
Loop that burp. Loop that burp.
Thanks for sharing that.